There we go. My name is Kirk Evans. Next to me is my colleague, Radu Grama. We're both from Premier Field Engineering, and both of us based in Las Colinas in Dallas, Texas. And yeah, thank you for the shout out. And today we're going to talk about delivering apps, SharePoint apps, using the new app model in SharePoint 2013. We went out of our way to make sure that the only Microsoft technology you'll really be seeing today is PowerPoint. Everything else we're going to show you is not Microsoft technology, and we'll make sure that we point that out. And our goal for this is to explore the process of delivering apps on non-Microsoft technologies. There are some pretty significant challenges that you're going to need to understand. You're going to need to understand things like security. You're going to need to understand also the type of code that we're writing is using security and using a lot of PHP. So, quick show of hands. Is there anybody in here that has never written any PHP code before? All right. So, we're going to show a lot of PHP code. We're going to show, we're going to talk a lot about security. So, if anybody's scared of either of those topics, please rate us highly and then feel free to find another session. So with that, so we are going to show a lot of code today, quite a bit of code. It's a 200 level session, so we're going to focus on what will it take for you to understand some of the basics. Rate us highly, sir. Thank you very much for making it out this morning. yes, sir? That's a fair point. So the question was, for the recording and also for the audience, is the concerns that we're talking about, is it just for PHP? Is it really for any non-Microsoft? And it's really the things that you'll need to understand when not using Visual Studio, not targeting .NET. What are the other, how would the other platforms do this? So PHP being the example we chose for this session. And you can see that we're covering a lot of material. We're going to talk about what's the scenario overview. We're going to look at gathering requirements, what you need to understand when you're choosing how you're going to deliver a new app for SharePoint 2013. What are the decisions you need to make? And we're going to need to understand OAuth. OAuth is a big deal in SharePoint 2013, so you're going to want to focus a lot of time making sure that you're comfortable with the terms of technology. Fortunately, Radu has a pretty wicked demo that's going to show some of the different interactions, so that we're going to be able to inspect that. And along with OAuth is also the client-side object model and REST, specifically using OData. This is also a new introduction in SharePoint 2013, is the ability to use OData to target the same endpoint the client SVC or the client-side object model used in SharePoint 2010. So new, again, is using OData, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Also, we're going to look at how we can integrate forms-based authentication, because one of the things that we want to be able to see is how do we enable how do we prevent swivel chair integration between these two systems? How do we allow our users to be able to sign in between these two systems and kind of tie this notion of identity together? And finally, we'll look at some of the things around packaging, what it takes to actually publish an app. So with that, we're going to go into the scenario overview. We have an existing solution, and it uses forms-based authentication, and again, no Microsoft technologies. There's Linux running in Amazon Web Services, AWS. There's Apache, MySQL, and also, there's PHP code running as well, and the choice of icons are on purpose. So with that, Radu is going to demonstrate the existing solution that we have.
All right, good morning. Excellent. So this was my development environment while I worked on this solution. So I'll quickly show the original solution that we have. Basically, we came up with a scenario. We have like a very simple like realtor type of application, MLS type of application, if you ever worked with one of those. So basically, the scenario is that we have customers, and we have agents. And agents basically can go ahead and create listings, update listings, view other listings, and the customer can send them messages, right? So if I would be a customer, I would basically come in and say, okay, I want to send a message and say, I don't know, can you buy me
a hotel? Love, Donald.
Yeah, that would work. Oops. All right. And we have some basic capture type of functionality here. All right. So then an agent basically can go in and log on to the system, and they can see those messages, and they can see some properties, and they can add properties and manage properties. All right. No, I'm not root. I'll put in my super secret password, and pretty much I can see the messages, right? I can say, okay, I'm done here. I can manage listings. I have a number of listings here, and I can look at a few listings. I can make modification. Let's say this one has, I don't know, 3 stories instead of 2 stories. I can delete one if I want to, or if I'm representing a customer and I want to search for listing from other customers, I can look for, I don't know, a town, for example. Well, that's not good. Let's see. Something like that, right? Look at these listings and then be able to print them for my customer. So basic functionality like a real estate application would have, mainly targeting agents and a little bit their customers.
Okay. So that's a little bit of background of the existing solution that our customers are asking us to please bring into SharePoint 2013. So what's behind it, though, is alternate technologies. Welcome, guys. Good morning. Behind this alternate technologies, like we said, we're using no Microsoft. Everything in here is PHP, LAMP, MySQL. So, Radu, can you show a little bit about what's behind this before we go into gathering requirements?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we look behind the scenes, I just did a trace route to the address I'm using. So I use this www.sphprealty.com, and it goes straight to Amazon, and you'll have to believe me that it's a Ubuntu 12.0.4 LT, I believe, or LE server.
Proving that we're not faking it.
And then the database is MySQL, so I just connected. I have a PHP MyAdmin endpoint here, basically, so I can manage databases. And you can see that I basically have 2 databases. And let's say if we go into the database here, you can see the entries that I just showed you once it comes up. But we'll let it come up. Pretty much standard LAMP configuration hosted at Amazon. So we didn't want to host it in Azure. We just said, okay, let's host it in Amazon, make sure that we're not doing any tricks on our side.
All right, so we're going to switch back over to presentation mode. Thanks. So now that we understand, not only do we have some functional requirements, but also we have some existing technical requirements as well. I want to see what do we need to do if we want to bring this functionality back into SharePoint 2013. And our business customers have asked us, customers currently send messages to agents from the MLS application. We had a quick demonstration of that, love, Donald. And the agents will also use the MLS application to review and manage listings. The customer just purchased SharePoint 2013, really excited, and they say, well, it's really cool that we can store our appointments in SharePoint 2013. Wouldn't it be great if we had a way to bring these two things together? In fact, all the agent operations should be able to surface in SharePoint 2013. So that's kind of our goal in walking through. How would we tie these things together to enable you to make those RESTful or CSAM calls back and forth between solutions? Before we get to the technical guts of how it's done, you have to understand there's some decisions to make up front. When you go to dev.office.com, that's the landing page for everything in SharePoint 2013 apps, dev.office.com. When you go there, it goes into, start, design, public, develop, and publish?
Publishing tools.
Yep, and then in the start section, it even highlights there's some decisions you need to make up front, so let's kind of walk through those. There's a couple of different things you need to understand about the app architecture, namely that the two systems communicate through RESTful interfaces or the client-side object model. So SharePoint can also raise events to the external system. The key part here is that a lot of the demonstrations you've seen this week have probably been Azure or IaaS running on-prem, but you can absolutely do this with non-Microsoft technology such as PHP. And another thing is to understand is that your storage, where are you going to persist data, whether it's SQL on-prem, SQL Azure, or some other, and ours is MySQL. So you'll need to understand some things about where will the app live, as well as where the data will be stored. And the next thing you'll need to understand are the different patterns for apps. There's a couple of different choices. There's a SharePoint-only app where all things are going to be stored in SharePoint, such as I can have a workflow, a list, instance. Maybe I have a new site column. So there's a couple things you can store in SharePoint. Obviously, that's not going to work here for our scenario. You could do a hybrid app, but we don't have any requirements really to store anything in SharePoint. So we're just going to choose the straight cloud app model. And for that, you need to understand things like where are you going to store data, whether Azure, ISV, also the start page location. This will be also important. Radu's going to point this out because you need to understand where's the start page for your app whenever you publish and also when you register on the seller's dashboard. And you also need to understand tooling. If you're going to bring the app forward, what are the different tools that you'll need? We'll highlight a couple opportunities for tooling throughout the rest of the session. So there's three different architectural approaches that you can choose from. There's the SharePoint-only app. And when you create those, that creates an SP web underneath the current app or current host web. Again, we really don't need this model. So the next thing we wanted to look at was, okay, given the choice of cloud-based apps, we have this PHP solution. Would it make sense to move it out to Azure? Well, it might have made sense, but it's not fair for our demo purposes because we want to show not Microsoft technologies. So we're going to continue. Instead, we're going to use our own provider-hosted app. And using a provider-hosted app means all we're really pushing to SharePoint is an XML file, this thing called the app manifest. The app manifest contains a little bit of information, things like a client ID, the version of the app, as well as the minimum version of SharePoint, the title, the picture of the app, but also there's the start page URL. And it's that start page URL that becomes critical because that's what SharePoint uses to redirect from SharePoint to our app. Now, when SharePoint redirects to our app, that means that we need to have this full page immersive experience. So if SharePoint simply redirected to our page, then we need a full page immersive experience. So every single app in SharePoint 2013 provides this. There's two other additional entry points that you can provide for your app to be able to surface inside SharePoint 2013, such as I could provide a custom app web part that enables my app to be able to surface within a web part inside an existing SharePoint page. Or I could even use a custom action to surface the app inside maybe a document library. So a good use case might be as they interact with a document, in the callout, I add a new item in the callout that says, click here to go do something with that document. So contextual information. We didn't really have any use case for either one of those, so we chose the full page immersive app experience. So our recommendations back to our customer will be, we're going to use a provider-hosted app model. We're going to continue using the existing solution as it is. We're going to surface it into SharePoint, and we're going to use Office 365. And this is going to be key because we'll use that to leverage OAuth. Because using the access control services in ACS, and we'll explain OAuth here in just a moment, of why this was an important decision point, but also that the listings will continue to appear in MySQL, appointments will appear in SharePoint, and we'll also leverage this thing called the Chrome control in SharePoint 2013 that allows us to enable our app to look and feel as though it's part of SharePoint experience. And we'll also, and again, we chose the immersive app shape. So to start out with, one of the first things you're going to need to understand while actually building this stuff is what is the .app package? Behind the scenes, we have a new packaging format. It's really just a zip file. And the zip file is the open packaging convention. That zip file we renamed to .app. So if you've done this in Visual Studio or seen the demos this week, you probably saw at some point they publish the app, and then that opens up in the desktop, and you're able to see that .app package. And for things like Azure auto-hosted apps, it can contain a whole bunch of stuff. Or SharePoint, it could actually create a WSP. For our purposes, really all it contains is the app icon, the app manifest, and then some relationship data underneath that the OPC convention uses. So the nice part is that Visual Studio 2012 does this automatically for you. You really don't have to think about it. But we're not using Visual Studio here, so we need to figure out, how did you create this OPC format using something that's not Microsoft? So Radu is going to show us, how do you generate this OPC package?
Absolutely. So the OPC package, as Kirk said, is basically a zip file, but it's a zip file that has a little bit more to it, and we'll take a look at one in a second. But basically, what we're trying to do with this APP is trying to tell SharePoint when we deploy the APP, the app, that we wanted to consider that we have an application and we wanted to give it an endpoint. So really, all we want to communicate, at least in this very, very simple application that we have, is that, look, there's an endpoint at this particular address that we want you to call when users in SharePoint want to launch our application. And this is the simplest possible manifest file that we can create. Basically, it says, here's the name of the application, here's a product ID, which is just a GUID version, SharePoint version, then properties about it. It has a title and a start point, and then we want SharePoint to know that it has this client ID, and we'll talk about it in a second, right? So then what we want to do is to add this file into a zip file. So the first thing I did was just like bring up WinZip and zip it and send it to upload it to my dev tenant in Office 365, and I got an error. So then it comes out that really you have to use the system.io.packaging API, which exists in Windows and it exists in Mono as well. So what I have here is I have a Mono develop project, didn't really do anything special to it, and I'm just using that system.io.packaging, which is documented pretty extensively on MSDN. And basically, you know, I took four steps. I just created a package. I just say open this, well, package.open with file.create. I gave it a path and a name. Then I said add a part to it, which is really like adding a component, adding a file into it. But the term it's using is create a part. Then really I have that file that I just showed you here. I have it on disk. So I'm using a copy stream function I created below, which just takes content from one stream, puts it into another one. Then I create a relationship, which is another concept that exists in these OPC files. So I just follow the rules, and then I did close. Now, you're gonna ask me, you have this magic string here. Where did you get it from? And I didn't know where to get it from other than create an app using Visual Studio, use the same API to basically spit out everything that was in there, and then follow the supported steps by calling this API to regenerate that file.
You reverse engineered it.
Well, using supported APIs.
There you go.
So that's pretty much what I did. Now, this is the simplest package possible, the simplest app possible. What happens if you have a more complex one? A couple of things. You can create a more complex project in Visual Studio and reverse engineer it, you know, let's say in MonoDevelop. Or hopefully there's going to be a tool out there pretty soon that's going to help us, you know, achieve the same functionality that Visual Studio does. But this one works, and basically if I run this application, I'll really end up with a valid app. And well, let's take a look at it. Finder would please to come up. So under my documents, projects, OPC, basically right now, I just created my app file. Not super excited, I know. Super exciting, I know. But then the next thing is that I basically went to my dev tenant in SharePoint, and I uploaded that, right? So the way you do it, you come to your dev tenant in Office 365, and you say new app to deploy, and then you upload the app file created, right? You pick it up, say okay twice, and you're gonna have it here. I just did it 8 hours ago, so I'm not gonna do it again, but that's pretty much how it's done.
So just really quick, out of curiosity, that sure looked like .NET code to me. So again, that was not running Visual Studio, it's not .NET, that is
right.
Mono. Which
right, that's Mono, yes.
So Mono is an implementation of the CLR that runs not on Windows, runs on allows you to do .NET coding on Linux.
That's right.
Okay, so that was it for packaging. Let's kind of move forward then to authentication. This is probably the meat of the problem. Is how in the world do we provide the authentication from these apps to be able to get back into SharePoint and vice versa? When you're building these provider-hosted apps, remember that was the shape that we decided on. We decided instead of the SharePoint-hosted or Azure Auto-hosted, we're choosing a provider-hosted, bring-your-own-server. And when you do this, there's a couple of things you'll need to do. First, you'll need to register with Access Control Services, assuming that your target here is to sell through the Office Marketplace. So you'll register your app with Access Control Services, and then you'll use some developer tools to debug on the platform of your choice. We hope you'll choose Windows and Visual Studio, but if not, you can use Eclipse or MonoDevelop, like Radu was just showing a moment ago. And then finally, you'll need to configure OAuth in your application. That's going to be the meat of the problem. We'll get to OAuth here in just a moment. And then the SharePoint package, which is demonstrated, you'll need to build the .app package. And you also need to focus on some entry points. Is the start page URL just simply going to redirect over to an immersive app, or are you going to surface through an app part? We've locked you in, sir. You're not allowed to leave. And then finally, you'll want to test on the developer site. You want to make sure that everything is up and functional, that you can get the OAuth tokens flowing across the wire. Now, I mentioned about this, I just used the word tokens. And how tokens are used in OAuth 2.0, and that's what SharePoint 2013 uses, there's five different pieces of information that are used together to be able to form up in what's called an app principle. Apps are first-class principles in SharePoint 2013. And you'll need an app ID. He already showed one of the IDs a moment ago. You also need to generate an app secret. So there's these two notions. There's a GUID that's the app ID, and then an app secret that's generated by ACS. And then you'll need to provide the title, app URI, and a redirect URL. These are available through a page that's in SharePoint 2013 called App Reg New. So if you just go to your SharePoint site, do App Reg New, then you'll be able to generate these bits of information and use them in your apps like we're going to. However, we're assuming that your real goal is to target the seller's dashboard. So that's actually what we want to show is how to use the seller's dashboard to generate the same bit of information.
All right, so we'll talk a little bit about the seller's dashboard. So basically, the seller's dashboard is where you create the same, where you establish identity for your application with ACS, so with with Office 365, if you plan to sell your application at the Office Store, or if you plan to use your application with Office 365. So basically, Office 365 needs to have a way to identify your application. And the way you do it is you go to this seller's dashboard. Now, right now, the seller's dashboard, I'm signed into it. If I wouldn't be signed in, so I'll just do one of these incognito windows. So basically, it's asking me to sign in. I'll put in one of my... But my other accounts that I never used, so please don't spam me. No.
Use it, can't remember the password.
It happens.
He uses this one. Please don't spam him.
All right.
But
so basically,
for illicit catalogs might be in order.
Yeah, don't publish applications on my behalf. So basically, you pick an account type. Let's say I pick individual here, and then of course you go through some additional information. And basically, this is what will show up on the page when you publish an application. But you would want to enter display name, description, website, and so on and so forth. So the approval process is pretty straightforward. The one thing I encounter is that if you don't enter all the information, if you enter bogus information, your account will be rejected. So at one point, I entered a website that did not exist just because it didn't let me go through, you know, with not entering a website, and I got declined because I didn't have a website. So keep that in mind. If you're in a rush, just make sure you enter all the right information. But once you get approved, and that usually happens very quick, You come to this seller dashboards page, and you know you can have information about your account, which we're not going to go through, but we're interested in applications. And you can manage your applications. I have none. Most interesting is you can manage client IDs. And client IDs are really application identities. So basically, I'm establishing an application identity with Office 365, with ACS. So from now on, I can publish applications that have that ID. So if you want to add a new client ID, it looks like this. I'll just call it ABC, abc.com. I hope I don't mess up some of these.
Just don't hit generate.
Well, I'll go ABCD then. And
hit it.
Click generate. I'll delete it after that. But basically, what you'll see in a second here is you get some information. You get a client ID and a client secret, which we'll talk about in a minute, but I just wanted to see that you actually get these. And then if we go ahead and say, Dan, have you currently copied it? This is the only time it shows it. Then really, now I can use, for my application, I can use this client ID, and this is the way by which the Office 365 recognizes, and ACS really recognizes my application. So if you look quickly into the manifest, you would see that I have the same ID. So that's how I got my ID.
Okay, so that was a very brief look at how you generate the client ID, the client secret. We'll see how those come into play with authentication in just a moment. So now let's talk about this thing called OAuth. OAuth is an existing protocol, and you've been probably using it. If you use Facebook and you like to spam your friends with things like Farmville, then you've probably used OAuth before. Because as you're going to add in an app into Facebook, it asks, do you trust this to be able to do something? And when you do that, the app in Facebook isn't actually running on Facebook servers. It's running somewhere else. And this is the same model. But understanding OAuth behind the scenes is important to understand how all that actually happens. So we're going to walk through the process. And the reason that we really want to focus on this is to get some of the names right. Because we're going to point out where some of these names are used inside the rest of the presentation. So first thing is the client's going to make a request. And that request goes to the SharePoint server. SharePoint will then go to ACS out in the cloud and will request a context token. So the context token is going to be important because it's going to establish context for the rest of our communication with SharePoint. So the STS, in this case, is ACS, where it turns back a signed context token that SharePoint then can then provide and use for the rest of the communications. So that context token is used and returned back to the content, back to the client, through a page with a hidden iframe. That hidden iframe then contains that the context token as part of the request that goes back to our app, which is SPHP Realty, or just more familiarly represented as Contoso.com. So Contoso.com receives a request, and inside that request, we have the context token that contains additional information, such as there is this thing called a refresh token. The refresh token is sent to the ACS server to be able to say, we have this token that says that we're going to be able to get data from SharePoint, but we need to be able to get what's called an access token back from ACS, and that's what we actually use and present back to SharePoint to say, I want to get data. So if we go to SharePoint with a context token, it's going to be rejected. If we go to SharePoint with the refresh token, it's going to be rejected. We have to provide SharePoint the access token, and the only way to do that is to go through this machination of where we take the context token, extract the refresh token, retrieve the access token, and finally, our app will then send a request to SharePoint using the access token itself, and finally, we get data back. And once we have data, we can serve up the contents of the iframe. So a lot of lines, I actually nicknamed this the scary slide. But if you look at it, it actually even kind of looks like Kerberos, and if you step back and squint a little bit. And this is going to be important to understand is the concept of there's first the context token, extract the refresh token, obtain an access token, and present an access token. In SharePoint 2013 and Visual Studio 2012, it's made really simple because when you say file a new project, of course we spit out a bunch of code for you that includes some helper methods, and in fact you really don't have to do anything but just hit F5 and all this just kind of magically happens behind the scenes. But again, we're not using Visual Studio 2012 here. So we kind of had to take some of the things that Token Helper was doing behind the scenes and adapt it for our purposes. So we're going to take a look at what did Radu do here to be able to adapt that.
Sounds good. So you have to keep in mind that what Token Helper does is nothing nothing secret. I mean, we're using the R 2.0 protocol. So if you can find any sort of an API in your favorite language or development platform, you can use that. You know, I know Java has that. I looked a little bit, and it has APIs for that. In PHP, there are multiple. I just picked one. So let me close this one and move to my PHP environment. So I'm using PHP Storm. It's an environment created by JetBrains, but a lot of people use Eclipse. It's a matter of choice. So I'll just start with a very, very simple, the most simple piece of code that exposes, I would say, the first four steps from the graph you just showed. So basically, if you look, this is SPHP Realty 1.php. So this is my endpoint. So right now, I'm in SharePoint. I click on the application, and this is what gets called, right? This is the first thing that gets called. So I'll go past the libraries. I'm using a jw2.php file, which I picked off the internet. It is a JSON web token implementation. And really what it does, it's very similar to what JSON.NET does in .NET. Basically, it takes a string, which is in JSON format, and it converts into an object, and it does a couple of things. If I have hashed data or encoded data, it decodes it. But nothing fancy about it, and you can find any other API will do the trick. But basically, what I do is I say, okay, I should have gotten an app token, which is that context token. It's app context token. I use the app token name. Too late to change it now. But basically,
no, change it now.
I'm saying, I know that that will be passed to me in the request. It's going to be a post to my page, and I'm going to get back an SP app token, right? So basically, what I get here is a long string, and then I pass it to this API to decode it. It's encoded, and I just want to decode it. And then part of that, I pass in the client secret. So the client secret is that secret key that you saw me show you on the client ID registration page. And I have a config file where I copied all this information, right? So here's my client secret. It looks like that. Here's my client ID. So basically, with these two pieces of information, I can now take that information that's being passed in SP app token, and I can decode it, and I can confirm that it actually comes from ACS, from Office 365. So then I know that I have a valid app token, and the information that's provided to me is valid. So I know that, okay, this is a valid request. That's the point where I'm at. So right now I'm just saying, okay, well, if I have an app token, if I don't have an app token, go to an Access Denied page. Otherwise, it's like, hey, SharePoint, I'm here. Life is good. So quite a bit of functionality for 10, 11, well, 20 lines. All right. So, okay, I have the app token. What now? With the app token, all I get is I get information about the application. I get a URI where to send back authentication requests. I have a refresh token. And in order to perform any sort of an operation, I need what's called an access token. So the next thing would be to get the access token. So if I think from a developer's perspective, okay, I have all these tokens. What's the access token? What's the refresh token? What's this app context token? So I compartmentalize it this way. The app context token is really the part that comes first and that tells me, hey, this is a legitimate request. Then I have a refresh token that I can use again, again, again to request access tokens. And the access tokens I need when I want to perform an operation against data. So right now I want to get that access token so I can perform some operation against data. So I modify the same file, the same entry point page, and I change this. So basically I'm taking the app token, and it has some fields now because it's been decoded from a string into objects. And then I do some splitting here, and basically I get a client ID, I get a domain, I get a target principal name, and I get a URL somewhere. Yeah, it's gonna be a little bit down. But basically I get all this information, and all these pieces you can find documented either in auth documentation, or you can find them on MSDN. So it's nothing is magic and nothing is secret here. But once I have those pieces of information, I'm basically building a post, and this is the actual this is the information I'm going to be putting in the post. Again, it's information you would find publicly. So I'm building a query with that post, and then I'm going to create some headers for my request. So I'm going to have a context type of application, xwww-form-url encoded, and this expect header. And also, this is documented. So once I have that, basically I have the header and the body of my post message, I just go ahead and submit it, right? And I don't know where to submit. What's the endpoint that ACS, that Office 365, it's waiting for me to send that request for an access token to. But as part of the application token, I do get that information. So everything really comes to me in that application token. I have to validate it. It's a good one, and then I can rely on that information from there on. So then at the end of all this code, I end up with an access token, right? So right now it's like, yeah, it's great. I have an access token. Now I can start to actually request data.
And we'll show that in the next section as well, once we actually make a request with the access token.
Yeah, absolutely. So the next step was, okay, well, let's kind of go a little bit into kind of putting a little bit of structure in the code. And we said, OK, we want really to have this concept of a session, because in our application, we have some sort of an identity, and we have sessions. And then we'll want, when users come into our application through SharePoint as well, we want to have that concept of session as well. So basically, two files there. One is this SharePoint.session.php, which really says, initialize SharePoint session start, or call this session SharePoint session start, which I'll show in a second. And this session.php is the file where I had session and login type of code before, and I have it now as well. So if I go to that code, there we go. Basically, the code here is just a copy of what we did before. All right, so we're doing the same thing. We're getting the app token, we're validating the app token, and then we're getting the access token. So right now we're good. We have an access token. And the next thing is we get the user. So we want to find out, okay, who exactly are you in SharePoint? Because I can get an ID for you and I can get a name for you. And that's really moving into data. So right now I'm asking SharePoint for data. Data could be list data, or it could be information about the user. Like right now I switch from the authentication authorization part where I was talking to ACS, and I'm talking to Office 365. So basically, I did the first 10 steps,
yep,
and I'm done. I have an access token finally. That whole thing happened. Those errors were traveled, and now I have an access token, and now I can start accessing data. And I think we want to...
Yeah, and some other points we want to call out here is, first is that there's this thing called session state. For any of the ASP.NET developers in the room, yeah, it's the same, pretty much the same concept that you're looking at when he puts something in a session variable. Another thing then we want to call out is what he's storing in session and why. He's storing the refresh token and the access token both in session. And the reason why is because we want to avoid that every single request has to go back to ACS to do that validation. So the refresh token can be stored how long?
I've seen 6 to 12 months. So it's valid for a very, very long time. The idea is that once you get a refresh token, you can hold on to it, and with the refresh token, so you don't need your application to be called. With that refresh token, you can just say, okay, I want an access token. I want to access data now. Now, an access token on the other side is lasts for hours. So in our situation, we decided to cache in the session. So basically, we establish a session and we store there the access token, which is a shorter lived type of token. It's still ours. It was a decision that we made. You can really plan to store the refresh token, which you can use then to get access tokens for many months if you want, or you can use the access token as we did, which is a simpler solution. You would have to have some sort of a mechanism to determine, okay, is my code failing because my access token expired? What can I do to pick up a new access token? Or you can do a hybrid. The decision is really up to you. So if you think that you have these two type of tokens, one that's long-lived, one is short-lived, and you can decide how exactly you want to implement your token caching mechanism. Either one would work.
So the next thing we want to talk about is REST and the client-side object model. I'm pretty certain this week, if you've attended any of the developer-based sessions, you've heard this. This will be a repeat. But for those who haven't necessarily attended the developer sessions, we're going to talk a little bit about the REST and CSOM model and what's new. And because what's going to be important is understanding how we do the communication between these two platforms. We're not trying to install PHP on the SharePoint server. In fact, we're going to continue using our existing Linux, Unix-based system in AWS. We're not going to install anything directly onto SharePoint. We're going to communicate remotely. And how we do the communication is through REST and client-side object model. And you can see that both of these, that there's just a whole bunch of arrows going all over the place in this diagram. But the key part is there's one endpoint called client.svc. And that's located at /vti/bin/client.svc. We know that people don't like to type that, so we even provided a slightly friendly name for it, an alias called _API. So if you like to type a lot, then _vti/bin/client.svc. Otherwise, it's just _API does the same thing. But notice that your JavaScript code goes through the client-side JavaScript library that we provide, and then goes and actually talks to this endpoint. And when it talks to that endpoint, notice the arrow behind that, that it talks to the server-side object model. Because one of the things that you'll see is that in the client-side object model, a lot of the APIs mirror the server-side object model. So client SVC is really interpreting a lot of those calls and forwarding to the server-side object model itself. So it's kind of good because it also implements all the best practices that you would expect. So making sure that the memory is being disposed of properly and the things you would expect the service to be able to do on your behalf. And then when the server-side object model it provides the data, it actually is working with the content database itself. And the same model applies whether you're using either client-side JavaScript or if you're using maybe managed client-side object model. Either one does the same thing. Now, when you use the RESTful interface using OData, OData actually does the same thing that you're looking at here on the screen as well. OData goes to the same endpoint, client.svc, that interacts with the server-side object model and then obtains data with the content database. Now, if you're not familiar with OData, that's okay. A lot of people, we introduced it in SharePoint 2010, and a lot of people just didn't ever notice that we did that. We introduced this thing called OData. Now, if anybody remembers kind of back in the day, there was this thing called RSS, really simple syndication. And you use that to consume and read blogs. That's really what it was designed for, was to read. And then somebody else came along and said, you know what, that's neat, but we could do better, and created a new thing called AtomPub. And AtomPub was kind of, if you squint, kind of looks like RSS, but the difference is it provides full CRUD operations, create, read, update, delete. So now that we have a protocol that provides create, read, update, delete based on either XML or JavaScript object notation representations of the data, and we can provide query semantics on top of that, then that provides our ability to represent data, query it across nodes, and do that in a predictable manner with a known API set, and using the API through the query string. So it provides some query semantics through the query string to be able to influence the data as it comes back and forth. Now, if you want to return XML, then you'll just simply query the data, and that is the default for returning data for OData. But if you want to return maybe JavaScript object notation, as we're going to do here, you're going to need to add in an accepts header. When you add in the accepts header, it needs to be application/JSON, and Radu's going to show this in his code in a moment. It needs to be application/JSON, semicolon, OData equals verbose. And when you add that accepts header, that signals to the OData provider that you're going to return JSON instead of XML, and then it'll return the data back for you. So if you're not familiar with OData, again, go to odata.org. There's actually even some public endpoints with some sample queries where you can go kind of play around with it and start to learn. It's very easy and approachable to start understanding how to use OData. So with that, let's see, how did we use OData here for communications?
All right, so basically we used OData to get information about the user. So it's just like getting information about the list. It's pretty much the same mechanism. And you're going to recognize the same pattern again and again and again. And basically it goes like this. We have an access token right now. We don't need to get one anymore, but we need it in order to be able to make the request. So we stored it in the session, and you will notice that we did a JSON. We do a JSON _decode again, and the reason is that every time we get any of these tokens, it's a stringified version of an object. So we had to make a choice if we want to store just certain fields, and we want to kind of pick and choose, or if you want to store the whole thing, and then we'll just decode it every time we need it, and we'll just access whatever fields we need. And we said, okay, let's store it all because we don't know what we might need from it in the future, so we don't have to request it again. So that's why we keep doing this JSON decode, and then we pick the variable, which in this case is stored in the session. All right, so again, we're building a request. Now, this time, we're building a GET request, and those are the two headers that are required. So one is accept application slash JSON semicolon OData equals verbose. If we don't put that, we're going to get back an XML format. So if you're okay with XML, you can get that. For most platforms today, it seems that there's more APIs that do JSON, and it's easier to handle on the client side at least. So, and the other header is authorization bearer, and then we concatenate the access token from the access token big string in part of the big object, big object. We have this access token key. So that is why we need to have an access token, because every time we make a request to get some sort of data or to post data or to delete data or to do any sort of data type of operation or management type of operation using the REST endpoints, we have to provide this type of information. If it's a post request, the headers might be a little bit there will be an additional number of headers. But at least these two will be here. And the access token will be there all the time. So basically, the access token tells SharePoint that, okay, this is a valid request, and SharePoint can determine that based on the token, this user or this application has permissions to add an entry or to request for, the userized entity in this case.
And there's nothing special here, by the way, about using PHP or even any other platform. If for the ASP.NET devs, if you're doing an HTTP web request and you want to be able to call SharePoint from something else using an OData endpoint, you do the same thing. You'd have to set an access token with the bearer header, and you'd also have to set the accept header.
Exactly. I actually looked for bearer access token the other night, and the first hit I got from the OAuth 2.0 documentation. So it's protocol specific. It's not implementation specific. So then we start with the HTTP request using the curl API in PHP. We pass along the URL. So now for the URL, what we pass here is really we pass the URL of the SharePoint application. And I know that I will always hit this particular site, right? I could have extracted in a constant, but I'm just using it here, so I put it in this way. And then we have the underscore API, which says go to the REST endpoints. And then there's a format that goes like web slash current user. And this is the OData format for endpoints, right? If we would want to look at a particular list, we would use slash list slash the name of the list. And so on and so forth. So it's fairly intuitive and it's fairly well documented. So then what happens next is we provide the headers, set a few other options, execute the request, and then we store that in the SharePoint user session variable as well. So we know that if we start a session coming from SharePoint, for the duration of the session, that user will not change, so there's no need to request information about this user again and again and again. And those are really the three pieces of information we cache. But if you look at this code, this is what you will do pretty much all the time. Use the access token or get an access token if one does not exist. Set up your headers and then make the request. Basically, that's pretty much what it is. Now, just to see what comes back, I can take this URL and with the help of the demo gods, this will work.
That's a lot of not Microsoft technology.
Yeah, it's it is. Please work. There you go. So right now I'm getting it back in XML because I don't have a way to, or I don't have a way I know. Well, let's try. No? Okay. I'm sure there's a way to provide a parameter, but right now we're getting exactly the same data as XML. If you look here, it gives me some information. So these are the fields that I will get back. It tells me a login name, and this is my ADFS-like-ish login ID, right? And then...
Does Chrome let you zoom in?
Absolutely.
No, IE does.
Yes, so that's the login name. I think that's better, right?
Oh, you can zoom in a lot.
And then it gives you the title, which is my name, and a lot of other information, right? It tells me I'm a site admin and all other stuff that you would normally get about a user, right? So basically, if you look back at the PHP code, right, at the end of this request here, that's once we execute, this is what we get back. But because we specified JSON as a format, we get it back in JSON format. So that's how we get data back.
Perfect. So in our example, the agents, as the agent logs in, they want to be able to log in to the existing MLS system. That part's not going away. They bought SharePoint 2013. They're going to need to log in there as well. Is there any way that we can provide a little bit better experience for this login so that we can easily have users log in once to one system and then be able to switch between them without having dual logins and kind of highlight that swivel chair integration feeling to them? So we want to improve the user experience by integrating identity between the systems. Keep reaching for the mouse clicker. So we have an existing FBA system, forms-based authentication, and we're just here storing username, password in MySQL. And we're not going to grant external users access to SharePoint. And that's not the goal here. And also, we're using Office 365, so obviously we're not going to change SharePoint's authentication. So we need to make a modification somewhere in how we're going to tie these users together. And Radu's going to show then how we can do that using forms-based authentication and PHP and MySQL.
All right. So this is not something that you always have to do. It was a decision that we made for this particular application. It makes sense. If you remember, we initially discussed where does the data live. It's part of the decision. Is it going to live in the application? Is it going to live in SharePoint? Or is it going to be in both places? And what we did is we chose for the data to live in the existing application in the MySQL database. So if you recall, in the existing application, I showed you that I can log in as a user, right? So as an agent. So I already have information. I already have an identity in that system. Now, as Kirk said, you don't want to have that, okay, let me log in here, let me log in there. So it's pretty much what you have when you use Facebook as an ID or when you use Twitter as an ID. It's like, okay, I can basically tie these two IDs together. So now I come in as SharePoint, my identity can be identified, and I can tie it to an existing identity since I need some sort of an ID to query data. What are my listings, right? My listings are listings where user ID equals something. So basically once we have this SharePoint user, since we came into the application the SharePoint way, basically we are navigating we are attempting to do a SharePoint logon. So basically we're saying, okay, does this SharePoint user exist in the database? And if we look at how that's implemented, it really goes and says, okay, again decode the SharePoint user information. We open a connection, and we look at the agents table, which is the users, where we actually have that particular SharePoint user. It exists, right? And then we return true or false if that SharePoint user is already exists in the system or not.
So you're not using SQL to query SharePoint there. You're using SQL to query MySQL, right?
Right.
Okay, making it absolutely crystal clear.
Oh.
It's early.
All right, so If you look, I'll just quickly show the data to show you how it looks. It looks for me. Well, this hopefully it's going to start. And I'll zoom in 1 second. But basically, if I look at the agents that exist, oh, come on. You can do it.
You can do it.
So if you look at the agents, you can see that basically we have two rows. We have myself and Kirk here as real estate agents. We're going to buy a hotel for Donald
Since
later
he's
today.
He's been doing all the demo work, and I'm just the PowerPoint guy. I haven't logged in.
So basically, I associated my SharePoint ID with my existing account, right? The other option would have been to just have a completely separate ID, and then I would have had my old data would have been separate from data that I would have created using SharePoint. But most likely, you would want to have something like this, right? If it makes sense for your application. Now, the way I did that is by using just another form. And in that other form, I gave the user the option to tie to an existing account or to just have a completely separate identity. Now, I wish I could show that, but because it's already done, and I only have one user in the Office 365 dev tenant, that's you'll have to believe me here. So basically, right now, I can log in either through using my username and password, or I can come in through SharePoint, and I'm recognized as the same user. So every time I come in, basically, I'm this user ID too, right? So if I go into, let's say, the listings table, and I look at listings, everything that comes in as agent ID 2 are my listings, no matter if I come in through SharePoint or if I come in through the FBA. And again, this is an implementation detail. You don't have to do it if it doesn't make sense for your application. But if it does, it's one way to do it.
So in summary, we covered quite a bit of information. We showed you how to do the OAuth dance. How do you do, given a context token, extract the refresh token, request an access token, and provide an access token back to SharePoint and able to actually communicate between the two endpoints. We discussed some caching strategies that you might want to use, not only in the Microsoft platform, but also non-Microsoft platforms as well. It showed that it's absolutely, completely possible to build apps without using any Microsoft technologies at all. Everything from MonoDevelop to using PHP, using AWS. Heck, he even went so far as to bring his Apple computer up here to make sure that it wasn't even using IE. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for coming out today. And
thank you.
For more information, we appreciate your tweets. I'm at KA Evans. He's at Radu Grama. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your time in Vegas.